Look up there in the sky. It's a bird, a plane. It's Handsome Boys Comics Hour.
Those boys are so handsome.
One writer,
one artist,
one weekly discussion of comics and nerd culture. I am your host, Robbie Dorman, literature geek and writer.
And I'm your other host, Eric Z. Goodnight, professional artist and illustration nerd.
And we are the Handsome Boys Comics Hour, your home for news, reviews, slightly antagonistic banter, and much, much more. And it's that and is important.
It is important.
I'll accept that.
You have to.
Oh.
It's in the record now.
Are you back in Florida, Eric?
I am back in the Palace of Solitude.
Is that what we're calling your apartment now?
That is what I've always called my bachelor pads.
I've never heard it before. That's been a secret you've kept until now, and now everyone knows.
I guess I'm sort of selective about who I tell it to. The cat's out of the bag now. You can't unbag that cat.
Nope, and all my cats know because they're all in the room.
They're clearly not in a bag.
They're not. One's on the floor. One's sitting on the top of a keyboard.
Well, clearly that's a good, like, for on a laptop, right? Because it's warm.
No laptops.
That your cats really are stupid. Clearly they know they sit on laptops because they're warm. All of the cats know this. Why do you have LD cats?
LD?
Learning disability.
I think that's racist, Eric.
I don't think it is. I think LD is a real thing. And I think you really do. You have an autistic cat.
I don't know what Harvey is, but he's not 100%.
I think it's autism.
I don't know if there's such a thing as cat autism, but
I think he was vaccinated too much as a kitten. He had too many vaccines.
Okay, Jenny McCarthy.
Too much exposure to. Yeah, I was going to say too much exposure to Jenny McCarthy. You stole my punchline.
Very sorry. Not sorry.
This has gone on for too long.
It probably has. So, folks, we got a great episode. We're going to talk. We're going to finish up the Walking Dead marathon retrospective. Dear God, so many
dear
zombies.
Dear God, so many.
So many zombies.
I'm just so sick of it.
We're going to read a whole bunch of comics, talk to you about them. But before we do all that, all those exciting things, it's time for Checking In. Checking In is part of the show where Eric and I talk about what we've been up to this week. And this week it has been jammed packed, right, Eric?
With vacation and not doing things that are easy to recommend.
So what? Where did you go, Eric? Where did you go on your vacation?
I visited the tiniest, crappiest town in North Carolina that I call home. It's called Kannapolis. If you're also from there, I probably know you, and I'm sorry. But I got to meet these people. They are my parents.
Would you recommend that to our listeners?
Yeah, if you have parents, I recommend it.
No, but your parents.
Yeah, well, you can't have them.
Not have them, just visit.
I don't want people to visit my parents. They'll probably get shot. I don't know. Like a bunch of random people visiting my parents. But dad's like, what's this? visited those parents, the older generation, and then saw my brother for the weekend. He took me to Criminal Records. Did you ever spend any time there when you were in Atlanta?
I did not.
And comic book store. Really rad little place. But I basically just took Brad around the new comic wall and talked about everything that's terrible in comics. Like, I just talked and talked and talked, and like, I read this, and it's good. And then I read all of these, and they're terrible. So it's kind of the same treatment, except now I'm giving it to my family. And this is actually pretty funny. that I was talking to Brad for so long about comics that some random guy in the store actually came up to me and asked me to recommend some comics for his like 8 or 9 year old son. So we talked about, I talked about comics with him for a little bit, and maybe he'll listen to this now because I brought up the podcast. And
what did you recommend?
Look it up. Believe it or not, Superior Spider-Man. It feels very appropriate for a kid. But yeah, I told him that I don't normally recommend Marvel books to young kids. I always pawn off like Avatar or
Adventure Time if they like Adventure Time.
Adventure Time, definitely. I mean, I don't know that I've ever seen anything quite so all ages, but yeah. I felt pretty good about really any Spider-Man. It's always been very kid friendly. I read Spider-Man as a kid.
Yeah,
but
I agree.
He specifically wanted something Marvel. And he was going to buy Civil War for his kid. And
no, like, don't. No.
Yeah, it's not that grisly, but it's a little too. Let's hunt down the Taliban for a 9 year old. Yeah.
Good. Anything else you want to discuss, Eric?
Oh no! In no way do I want to discuss Shovel Knight, which I've been playing like a crazy person.
I was going to say every time I look up, every time you're on Steam, it seems like you're playing Shovel Knight.
I've still only got about 4.5 hours into it. Shockingly enough, it seems like I've been playing it for a month. But it's so fun. It's so fun. And I've hooked up my my actual NES controller to the PC. And I'm playing. I mean, it's clearly they've designed this game to be played with an NES controller because it's like, it's such a joy to play it that way. What did you play with? An Xbox controller?
Just Xbox controller.
I started out with that. I really don't like the cross pad on it. It just doesn't feel right.
No, the D-pad's not very good on it.
No, well, neither. The joystick nor the cross pad were very, just bad.
I was going to say that I love Xbox controller. Like, I think it's like the perfect controller, except the D-pad is bad.
I can definitely get behind that. It's been such a blast to play it.
Do you think it's too hard? I think we were talking.
No, I don't. I mean, I'm fairly used to playing like Mario games, and it just feels sort of par for course to have to die a lot and have to try over. You know, so yes. I'm relatively used to that, and the only level I've gotten frustrated on so far is I started. What I assume is the final level. It's the number 2 of the Enchantress's levels. And it could be that there's just a ton more stuff. I got frustrated on it and had to walk away because I was slogging through the first level. But, you know, finally got to a place where I could get through it and beat it and, you know, didn't quite start cutting, you know, just out of frustration.
Yeah, I actually, it was like halfway through. I forget which level it was that I died 17 times. Because once you beat the game, it tells you how many times you died on each level.
Right.
And one level it was 17 times, right about the halfway point. It's just some certain checkpoints are very inconveniently placed. And right before really long sections that are very, very hard. I remember what it was. It's when, you know, those little platforms that you activate and they zoom across.
Oh yeah. The ones that you hit and it pukes up rainbow shit.
Yes. But then the rainbow goes away like in after 3 seconds.
I absolutely hate those.
Yeah. That section I died many, 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 many times.
There were the one in the second to last level was the one that was just wrecking me, but there's a lot of stuff in there. I mean, it's tough, admittedly. But I think it's probably just a very appropriate amount of challenge where it's actually fun. And the fact that you have infinite, like that is one of the best things about modern games is you don't have like 3 lives and 3 continues and then the game explodes.
No.
Like I think all like old Contras do that, don't they? They just melt.
I think it's built in.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Like Ninja Gaiden would actually like would actually like kill your cousins if you didn't beat it, you know, in an amount of time that was allotted.
Well, it's so strange that so many relics of video games are still around from when they were just trying to get more money out of people at arcades.
Yeah.
And that's all that is, the amount of lives and continues you have before you start over. That's all that is. It's just a relic of what them wanting you to pump more quarters in. And there's no reason for that to be present in, on any console gaming or PC gaming for that matter.
Well, I mean, almost every bit of, a lot of it came out of that. I mean, the whole idea of a level boss, which is like such a staple in anything, that totally came from arcades, because the idea is you're supposed to be like, oh, I'm almost at the end, but really it's this big tough thing that you think you're going to get past, but you just have to just put in like $3 more to get past this guy that's really hard.
Right.
But you think you're through most of it. It's clearly evolved into something very different, but there's a lot of the stuff that totally grew out of that tradition.
That's true.
But I like the more modern take on it. Almost any game, you know, where your life grows back and you can restart as many times as you need to. It doesn't punish you for not being the wizard.
But no, I didn't really do anything, but I'm going to use that to be fair, I did do things, but nothing worth much talking about. But I'm going to talk about something I've been using for a while now, and I think it's interesting. I think it's a good kind of task reinforcement device.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of, it's called Habit RPG. It's habitrpg.com, I think it is.
Now, this is not the one I think we talked about. I think this has already been introduced to me. I was confusing this for the one that plugs into your Fitbit. This is not that.
No, this is not that. Although I'm also interested in that. I'm going to look into that because I do have a Fitbit. This is kind of, it makes you into like an RPG style fantasy character. And you basically assign yourself like different things you need to get done. You have habits, dailies, and to-dos, and you can structure them however you want. And then as you do them every day, you level up. If you don't do them, you lose health. You can collect things. You can buy new gear for your little avatar. It's really just a system to remind you to do things on a day-to-day basis. And I've been using it pretty religiously. And I like it. It actually has helped me out remembering to do things. Like actually sync my Fitbit to the computer. So I can see the stats I do. I actually am keeping track of how many steps I'm taking every day, how much I'm sleeping every day. Like if I don't, this wasn't here, I would forget to sync my Fitbit, and then I forget to look at all that stuff. But I always, I do the first thing when I get on my computer at night. I go do all the stuff that I did during the day. I see what I don't need to do. It's pretty smart in that if you wait too long to do things, it'll actually increase the experience you get from them. So it kind of incentivizes it a little bit as long as you buy into this system. I mean, it's not really the RPG kind of your character thing is kind of an afterthought, honestly, but it gives you kind of an idea of how well you're doing. If you're losing too much health, you know, oh, I need to start doing that more often. At least it reminds you, it keeps it in your head, which I think is the most important thing. The only thing I think when I've mentioned this to you before, this is what you brought up about why it doesn't work a lot of the times, is because you do have to maintain it. It requires maintenance.
Yes.
It requires you to type in what you need to be done, and you need to do it every day or every other day, you know, whatever kind of schedule you want to set up. But you have to do that.
Yes. You basically have to use it as your main to-do list to even have any use out of it.
Correct.
And I've had other similar systems. Like I had some Android app that was so generic, I don't even remember what the name was, but it was sort of touted as the Epic Win knockoff for Android, but it's just so crappy. It was really just badly made, but you know, it worked relatively well, and it plugged into a task manager I was already using. But I don't know, did you ever try Epic Win? Because you're an iOS guy.
No, I never did use Epic Win.
Were you ever interested in it? This is,
I never,
it seems like there's a lot of overlap in functionality.
I've never even heard of it, honestly.
I think it's a lot like this. It has been around for a long, long time. My brother used to use it. You might even like it more than Habit RPG because I think it's more fully formed. I think Habit RPG is cross-platform because it's iOS, Android, and you can check it on the web, can't you?
Yeah, I it's a little tricky to sync it to your phone, I just haven't done it yet because I'm lazy, which is funny enough because that's exactly what this thing is supposed to combat.
Just put it on your list and then you'll get points for it.
It's a good point. And that's the other thing, like you can just totally cheat.
Yeah.
Woke up today. Whatever.
Level up.
But yeah, I like it. You have to check it every day. If you don't do that, then it's not worth anything.
Well, it'll just probably be yet one more to-do list or something like that that I don't quite keep up with.
Just put keeping up with it on your to-do list in the system, and then that's the first thing you check off every day.
Bam! Problem solved.
There you go.
Just hacked the system.
Free XP. Leveling up. Whee! But yeah, that's it. That's all I got to talk about. I don't want to talk about driving or food.
It's probably fine. We're boring. Let's talk about comic books.
And with that amazing segue, we're going to end checking in. We are sufficiently checked. We're going to go over to Weekly Floppies. Weekly Floppies, it's part of the show where Eric and I read the week's books, or at least a nice, good selection of them, and tell you to buy or do not buy them.
Mostly, we tell you not to buy them.
It seems to be like that's a trend lately, sadly enough. Used to be like we have a buy on every issue.
I think it comes in waves. Like there will be a couple of good weeks, and then there's a couple of bad weeks. It's really not all that bad. I do feel like there's a lot worth defending. And unfortunately, there's a lot that gets canceled that's worth keeping.
Yeah. We're starting off this week with Moon Knight, number 6, starting off with Marvel. Written by Warren Ellis, art by Declan Shalvey, colors by Jordi Pelaer, and letters by Chris Olopoulos. This is unfortunately the last issue that will be Warren Ellis and Declan Shalvey teaming up on this book, which is quite a shame because I have loved this run of theirs, this little tiny 6-issue run. It's going to switch over to Brian Wood and Greg Smallwood, I believe. He draws Dream Thief. And I've seen they have the preview of the first 4 pages of the next issue in the back of this. And yeah, we'll probably read it, check in and see what it's like. But this issue is really interesting in that Moon Knight is barely in it. We're following basically this cop who hasn't done much anything with his life except be a cop. And he basically wants to replace Moon Knight and be the new Black Spectre. And I think I really like it. Like every other issue of this I've read, it's really interesting. And I think it despite not really showing Moon Knight at all, I think it really gets to the core of what Ellis is trying to tell you about Moon Knight.
What is it you think it's trying to tell you about Moon Knight?
Well, I think he kind of says it at the end. I mean, I think it's a little bit more complicated than that, but. Mm-hmm. Like, at the very end of this, basically Moon Knight fucking wrecks this dude. This guy is like, Moon Knight's telling him about who the original Black Spectre, what he was. And he basically says, let me tell you a thing about me. People who love me and suffer and die. I never want to be loved. That's why I always win. That's how the book ends. I think that's Ellis trying to be succinct about how he envisions this character. Is that, like, what this guy finds out through his investigations of all this, because, you know, Moon Knight has, like, all this money, and he has this car that drives him around, and everyone is just telling him the same thing. This guy works alone. He's always by himself. Everyone who's ever been, and he interviews all these people who've been involved with him in their lives, and they've all left him because they don't like him anymore. And I think that, I don't know if there's any kind of greater message about superheroes or anything about that, but I think it is kind of what Ellis is trying to get to the point of Moon Knight. I don't know if it's anything else about like vigilante superheroes and stuff like that, but I think that's what he is saying about this character, at least what he was trying to say in this 6-issue run.
It doesn't really feel like as unique a statement as the other Moon Knights.
No, I don't think. I think that's just because of the fact that it was. I think he was trying to wrap it up a little bit, like wrap up,
yeah,
like put a little bow on it. And I think he. Oh, we got an autistic cat dragging his shoelace in here.
His shoelace.
He dragged his shoelace in here because I played with him earlier with it. And now he wants to play with it again.
I was going to say he wears shoes now. Autistic cat shoes.
But I think it's just the fact that he's trying to put a bow on it in that it can't be as expansive as those all the other issues have been.
I think that's what's troubling me about it. It for me, it kind of falls flat. It's not awful. I don't know what it is. Like I've been enjoying these less and less. It's by no means bad, but I don't know. I'm really not grabbed by it. This is not great Ellis to me.
Well, I mean,
it's fine, but I sort of don't expect fine. I mean, just to the moral of the story is, oh man, this guy works alone. He doesn't, I mean, it's just not that much of a statement to me. I mean, I don't like to say that it's not for me, but I'm almost disappointed that I don't like it more than this. You know, I don't know. Maybe I have to sit on it a while, but I've definitely not come away with a lot of warm and fuzzy feelings where I picked it up excited to read it and was a little unhappy.
I don't think it's as nearly as glamorous as any of those other issues.
Right.
It's kind of like here, this entire issue basically centered around this loser who wants to, be Moon Knight, so to speak, by basically replace him, but he ends up killing his wife because of that. And a lot of this, I think, is lost in that. In the end of the day, this was Marvel hiring Ellis, and by extension, Shelley,
mm-hmm,
to reboot this character.
And I think they've done a marvelous job of that.
But I think that this issue is that it isn't as kind of, I think it's well constructed and, you know, it tells the story very well, but it's not as interesting, so to speak, as the other issues.
Yeah. It's not, he doesn't really have, I agree with where you came from earlier that he doesn't really have the space to do anything truly exemplary or incredible with this. It just sort of has to end at that moment and feel like it's wrapped up the package. I think you were very succinct with that. It's just, it works very well for you. I was expecting much more out of it. And right. I didn't get what I wanted and I'm disappointed.
Yeah, the art is still gorgeous.
No, the art's amazing. The color's great. Really, it seems strange if you've bought the other five to not buy this one. It is the weakest. I thought the last one was the weakest because there wasn't enough sort of hook to it, that it was just all just like kick-ass beatdowns. But this one feels even emptier than that. It feels like his touch is just a little bit too light. But this is still, it doesn't ruin. I think he's just a key. I could just accuse him of doing too little. He's not done enough to ruin what he's already done extraordinarily well in 1 through 5.
Yeah, I am a buy on this issue. I really think it's like every, like we've referenced this, that every, I mean, all these issues are self-contained. Like you could pick up 1 or 3 or 6 or 4 individually and you don't really need to read the other issues to get what the issue is telling you. And each issue is like a different genre. We've mentioned that it feels kind of like Planetary in that way.
Yeah.
And I think that, I don't even know what my favorite issue of all of this 6 issues was. I know that
it's Ghost Nux. You know it.
Okay, it's Ghost Nux. You're right.
It's everyone's favorite.
Ghost Nux is pretty awesome. God damn, I wish I had that page. But yeah, I think I'm gonna end up, I'm gonna buy this in trade. I want to own this on paper. Mm. I am hopeful that Brian Wood's run on this after is half as good as this has been. I hope he
I like the preview.
Yeah, the preview is not bad. I think that Brian Wood has said, I'm not going to do what Ellis is doing. I'm going to, you know, take the character in a logical place where, like, obviously use the same kind of character that Ellis has used, but I'm going to do what suits me and suits the new artist. I'm not going to try and just mimic Warren Ellis, you know, 100%, which I think is the best thing he could do. I don't think that...
In other words, I'm going to make a comic book.
Precisely. But we're going to check in on it. I'm a buy on this one.
Well, I have bought this one. I enjoy it well enough. This is the worst one. So I don't know.
If someone just walked up to you at a comic shop and said, and had Moon Knight 6 in their hands and said, should I buy this? Would you say yes or would you say no?
If they could not buy 1 through 5, I would say yes.
Okay, then.
But that's...
In a vacuum, it's a buy. Is that what you, that's what I'm asking.
If their option is, should I buy Moon Knight number 6 or shoot this baby in the face, then I'm going to be like, good God, man.
I would buy
that comic book.
I would say, like, against, like, the average comic. Like, if they brought, like, a median, the comic that we always, the comic, like, an average comic, like we say, is like that Teen Titans comic. Remember that one? And we were just kind of like, it's fine.
It's a comic book. No, I don't look at it like that. I think, like, do I recommend it? You know, are you going to spend your hard-earned money on it?
Right.
It's
so. Is that a no?
I'm feeling so indecisive about this because I love this team and it's good. I expect more than good. I expect exemplary from this team.
But is that fair?
They are. It's like a B minus book in my eyes from like an A plus team.
They will be working on a comic book from Image coming out in a few months, I believe. They've announced it.
So I guess I got to put my cards on the table, and I'm just so reluctant to say that I'm a do not buy.
Okay.
On Moon Knight. That's it just kind of hurts me to say it, so I think that's why I've been dancing around it.
I just wanted to drill.
I know.
Deep drill.
I bet you do.
Mm-hmm.
I bet you do.
Mm-hmm. Episode brought to you by Monster Ultra Red.
No, it's not.
Okay, it's not. Next up, we're going to read New Avengers number 22. Written by Jonathan Hickman. Art by Kev Walker. Colors by Frank Martin. Letters by Joe Caramagna. Magma.
Mm-hmm.
This is... I was very surprised to see that this book is coming out 1 week after the last issue came out. It's really amazing to me. It's a different artist. So that, I mean, that's
clearly
why it's
a
ready.
Different
but,
artist.
But they were just like, oh, well, it's ready. Let's put it out. I mean, I think Marvel's just like, if it's ready, we'll ship it. It continues directly from events of New Avengers last week. The main difference is the art. So I'm going to start with that, Eric. What do you think about this art?
Do not like it.
Yeah, I was very, very iffy on it myself.
The panels feel quite empty. The drawing feels very... I'm not sure exactly what the right... Amateur's not the correct word because I think it has too many... wrong commentations. Immature may be more the correct word. This feels like it's drawn by an artist that's not quite found himself yet. Or if he has found himself, he needs to go back and look some more because it's, there are some panels in here where he sort of nails it.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of it just feels clunky. Like this whole splash page of Black Panther punching Namor in the face,
mm-hmm,
feels like why is a whole page wasted on this? This looks like a 19-year-old's like drawing on notebook paper. I mean, it's clumsy. There are some nice faces and some interesting poses, but by and large, it just feels very clumsy. The artist's style almost seems to change from, you know, panel to panel. They're just not terribly well defined.
Now, everyone's mouth is wide open.
Yeah, big square mouths.
Yeah, and like you said, some of the shots are really good. Like, it's strange. Like, near the end, that's what really I was like, wow, those last few pages, when everyone's just still and it's dark, it's a little bit more to me. But when it's like this high emotion, Namor and Black Panther screaming back and forth at each other and punching, like, none of the fight scenes seem like very impactful. And it's so exaggerated at some point, it just seems silly to me. I don't feel like what I'm supposed to be feeling. I've been following this story all along. I know the stakes, and it just doesn't, it doesn't deliver them like the last issue did.
Yeah, this is a particularly potent moment, and the art makes it almost impossible to take seriously. The whole point of this issue is the emotional beat where these guys are fighting, and they're basically all angry at themselves for what they've had to do.
Right.
And I agree with you. It makes it very hard to take it seriously. You just sort of want to point out how ridiculous it is. It completely puts a pin in it. It's bad.
Yeah.
It ruins it.
I was like, the last three pages, I really, really enjoy, just because I think the artwork's better in those last three pages. And it's a mission statement. It's kind of a repeat of Reed Richards' mission statement about this team and what he's willing to accept and not accept. And that's really good. And I actually felt something about that. But this whole, like, this Black Panther Namor fight has been leading up to this for a long time. And they finally get to it. And I just don't, it doesn't feel like anything to me. And it's kind of, it's disappointing. I love this series, but you don't need to buy this issue. I'm a do not buy.
Yes, I'm a do not buy as well, which is a real shame. This could have been, I can't even think, like, the critical issue, the one that had the most emotional weight. Mm-hmm. It's got zero.
That's a double do not buy. New Avengers number 22. It's a sad one. That's a sigh.
Yeah. They must have not thought that it was an important issue.
I don't know. They expected more from the artist, or I don't know.
It's entirely hard to say. Mm-hmm.
But next up, we're going to jump over to our Indie Book of the Week. It is Genius, number one, with Mark Bernardin and Adam Freeman as writers. Efua Richardson, I don't know if I'm saying that correctly, but that's my best guess, is on art. Troy Petery doing letters. This is a comic book that's a long time in the making. I think it was like, this is like some kind of pitch war or something like that, you know, where everyone pitches an idea and then it ended up winning that. Originally, it's by Top Cow Productions, and Top Cow is still hanging on as a company. But the premise of this is that there's this inner city girl, she's 17, who is a secret genius, and she has united all of the gangs in South Central LA, and now they are waging war on the police. Successful.
I've made it through all of that without groaning.
Okay, I was gonna ask, like,
do I get like a Scooby snack or something?
I think so. I'm taking by that statement that you did not enjoy this comic book, Eric.
This book is fucking retarded. it was hard for me to make it through you describing the premise, much less read this whole book.
Yeah.
You know, I was sitting thinking back on this before we started recording, and what I would compare it directly to is Oren Ishii's story in Kill Bill.
Okay. You're right. It is kind of similar to that.
It is exactly the same, because it is, you know, woman killer in a man's world. And I think about the reasons that that works and this doesn't. This has so much reality in it. Like, this feels like they're trying to set this up in a real world. Kill Bill is a cartoon.
Yes.
Where Oren Ishii is basically like fucking Wonder Woman in the middle of normal humans. And beyond that, you also see some real scenes. Like, there's some real meat to Oren's story.
Mm-hmm.
Some things that really, like, you stop and pause, and, like, they dwell in her moments. They show how she suffered. They show how she earned the place she got to.
Right.
They don't do that here. They're just like, oh, man, she's smart, and she shot some dudes. And that's going to work. Like, I really don't think that skinny, hot girl in the middle of a bunch of misogynist, like, gangsters, I don't think that's going to work. Particularly when they tell the story like this anemically. I don't buy it. I don't enjoy it. I don't think it's even written well beyond all of that. Like, what did you want to jump in with? I've really monopolized this.
No, I was just going to say, like, the idea of it isn't necessarily bad. Like, yeah. I like the idea of a female gangster taking control of, you know, the inner city gangs and, like, waging war with the police.
Like, I sure as hell liked Oren Ishii's story in Kill Bill.
Exactly.
That was awesome.
Exactly. And it's just, they hit every cliche you could possibly, like, yes. Her liking chess. Like, oh, look, oh, chess, I like this game. Really? And then her, oh, and she had to hide that she's smart, so they show her a test, her taking a test and circling the wrong answer.
Yeah.
On purpose, just to, you know, to hide under it's just makes no sense. Like you said, it's done poorly. It's a good premise done poorly. What do you think about the art? I'm curious what you think about that.
It ranges.
Right.
There are some pages, like the introductory pages are, and unfortunately, they seem like they're done as an afterthought, particularly the first page
mm-hmm.
where they're trying to set up the stage here.
Right.
Where they're just like exposition dump.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what a sloppy way to start this story. Those first two pages are just about the worst thing I've ever seen in a comic. The rest of the art, like, I think it improves drastically as it goes on,
mm-hmm.
which is either a sign of they just did the parts that they thought were interesting first and then just sort of, you know, bullshitted their way through what was left or ran out of time or...
I don't think running out of time was the problem. This comic's been in development for forever.
Okay. Well, there you go. Then it's entirely possible that they've been working on this first issue for an incredibly long time and have developed tremendously as an artist while working on it.
Yeah, it's possible.
Looking at the preview cover for book two, and it is, like, what story is that telling? Like, now, like, if I stare at it for a long time, it's a guy pinned behind a couch getting shot at.
Yes.
But that is a terrible cover. It is 98% couch.
You're right. Yeah.
Who is going to look at that and be like, man, I got to buy this book. It's about a couch. There are a lot of failures in this book. Like I looked at the font, the black letter font that the logo was typeset in, and I was already rolling my eyes.
Yeah,
can you believe that was what turned me?
I don't like it myself, so I'm gonna have to say we're not buy on this comic book. Yes, yeah. This is not a very good comic book. I was really hopeful, but it's not very good. So do not buy it.
No. It kind of breaks my heart because this could potentially have worked. Does not work at all.
No.
I'm gonna emote and scream no, like this woman on the second page.
Yeah, we're going to move over to DC. And first off, we're going to do Grayson number 2. Written by Tim Seeley, plot by Tim Seeley and Tom King, art by Mikhail Janine and Guillermo Ortego and Juan Castro, colors Jeremy Cox, letters Carlos M. Mangual. We really liked the first issue.
Mm-hmm.
This is delving deeper into kind of just a lot of different elements of this organization, of Tim Grayson's relationship with Batman, and him and his partner trying to figure out something about an artificial stomach that makes you into a cannibal if you have it installed on you.
I mean, why not, right? Did you say Tim Grayson? Am I crazy?
I probably did. Dick Grayson.
That's both of them. They did the fusion dance.
I was thinking to... I had multiple Robins working together. That doesn't...
Multiple Robin syndrome.
Multiple Robin syndrome. That's really a problem. That's the MRSA no one talks about.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about this, Harry? Did you think this is a... Well, I know we liked the first issue. Do you like this one, too?
Yeah, I like the way that this series is shaping up. This is like fucking Bizarro week because the DC books are good. this is a pretty fun book. It's weird. It's a strange premise, but you get to see more sort of into the underpinning of you know, why Dick's doing this and more about the characters. And I think it's really weird that like it starts off at an all girls school where they're like, all right, girls, you're not sexy enough. Now kill someone with a crossbow. Did you read it as that? Like the headmistress is like, stick your butt out more.
I don't know. I just thought, you know, that it's just, she's just trying to make them perfect weapons. And that includes using your sex appeal.
I'm not criticizing it. I think that it's fascinating. Something about the storytelling in this is a little bit messy to me. Do you agree? Just sort of the sort of frame story aspect of this issue, how it starts and ends in the same place.
Well, that doesn't bother me necessarily.
Some of the jumping around as well.
It's a little frenetic. Like there's a lot of like you hit Midnighter, then you get Robin Dick Grayson and Batman talking multiple times, which is, I actually like those moments just because it shows Batman as like a person who has memories and feelings.
Yes.
And not just like some murder vigilante machine, like who doesn't, you know, just doesn't care about anyone, only cares about stopping crime. But when they finally get to the main plot of this about them trying to investigate this weird stomach thing and this weird, the woman who's like super speed because of this. And that was really interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess they put it in as much sense as, but the whole thing of like mixing in the Hood and Spiral and Midnighter and all that stuff all together, I'm not against that, all those things in this book, even though having Midnighter and Batman in the same comic is kind of weird because Midnighter is originally like a parody of Batman before he was in DC. I mean, that's exactly when he was in Stormwatch and the Authority, he was a parody of Batman. He's the guy who, like, is programmed to fight and, like, knows the city. And now he's in a comic book with Batman. And it's not a parody of... It's just strange to me. But I like the character. It's just odd that they put them in the same book without, like... I don't sense any irony in that. Maybe it will develop after time. But I like the weird 60s kind of spy influence on this book. So and the art's really nice, even though it's, I can't tell that there's three different artists for the most part.
It looks, yeah, I would have never guessed that, honestly.
Yeah, it looks pretty smooth and nice.
No, I'm developing a lot of affection for this book. I can't wait to see more, honestly.
Yeah, I'm a buy.
Total buy.
Double buy. Grayson number 2. With an ad for Multiversity in the back. Some crazy
thing. The longest ad ever.
Yeah, Grant Morrison. It's Grant Morrison. Even his ads are really long.
Take that, Grant.
Take that, Ouch. Grant. Lastly, this week we're doing Detective Comics. It says Batman. Why is Batman on top of Detective Comics on the cover? I just was looking at it and I just noticed
what else
that.
What else does Batman have in his life?
I know, it's a Batman Detective Comics. I mean, it's Detective Comics. It has a giant picture of Batman on the cover. We got it. Storytelling by Francis Manipal and Brian Pichelletto. That is Francis Manipal doing. He is the artist of the pair. Pichelletto is the writer. So we keep that clear. Steve Wan's doing letters. This is the conclusion of this Icarus storyline that we've been following for the most part, about, you know, Batman and Harvey Bullock trying to figure out this murder and where this drug's coming from. And this kind of actually managed to wrap up most of the stuff in this story in a pretty interesting way. Actually, I liked it a lot.
I'm missing big chunks of this story, and I'm disappointed about that. That being said, I mean, I understood what was going on, and I enjoyed it. I'm going to have to go back and read all of these, because this is just... this is a solid story, and we've not been treated to enough good Batman family stories. I don't know. I think that's possibly why I'm excited about Grayson as well.
Right.
But this is solid. It's all in landscape.
Yes. It's and beautiful.
Every bit of it.
And
it's well done. They've all been really nice.
Yeah, the art is always great.
And your squid buddy makes an appearance.
He does, Mr. Squid.
That is his name. Mr. Squid, that's his name, my
squid again is Mr. Squid.
That is what I was going to do.
But the art's really beautiful, and I like it additionally because it shows, like, Bruce Wayne not necessarily winning. Like, he kind of fails a little.
Yeah.
And I think that's one thing that Batman comics don't do enough. Like that's like a central tenet of Batman, is that he always wins, regardless of the situation. And at least showing him having some vulnerabilities and failing people once in a while that isn't Robin being beaten to death is a good thing. Like, it's okay for him to have a small victory and a small defeat at once.
I could not agree more.
Yeah. And yeah, Mr. Squid, there's a giant Batman mecha suit that is...
again, I mean, why wouldn't there be?
Yeah, it's basically... it looks kind of like a cross between Batman Beyond and the suit from Dark Knight Returns. But I'm a buy on this. I'm buy on this whole run. I'm really liking what these guys are doing in this book.
No, I think of all the Batman stories we've done, I wholeheartedly recommend this arc. How many did this end up being?
Just four issues.
Six?
Four issues.
Four?
Four issues.
That's unreal.
No, five issues.
I was going to say.
I stand corrected.
There's something I've missed here. It's
We didn't read the last one. We didn't read part four.
Okay.
Maybe, I don't know. We miss either one or two of them. I've been reading them all along, so I have the whole story. But you got the gist of it before without reading the... yeah, but it's very good. Bubble buy. You guys should buy this. It's really a good Batman comic. It's the Batman comic I like.
It's the Batman comic everyone should like because it's good and not bad.
It's
like
good and not bad.
All the other ones. Yes.
All of them.
Isn't that insightful?
Eric just said all the other Batman comics
ever. All the ones that we've read recently. Well, per bad.
Oh, yeah. You gotta use that voice when you're...
my squid again is Mr. Squid.
So that's going to wrap us up for Weekly Floppies.
That's going to flop us right up.
Flop us right up. I think I read other comic books this week. I just can't remember them.
I bought a bunch of them, but didn't have time to read them yet.
I read Black Widow. Black Widow was good.
Didn't Steven Universe come out this week?
It did.
I don't understand this character, and I want to read this. This is going to be my introduction to this silly ass character, and I'm stupidly excited about it.
I almost put it on the list. I should have. In retrospect,
you mean you don't want to read Genius again?
No, you know, time makes fools of us all.
Genius makes fools of the people that made Genius.
And everyone who bought it, including us.
Like us!
Like us. But with that, we're going to jump over to Nerd Boy Book Club. It's a time part of the show where Eric and I will assign, quote-unquote, a longer work, and we'll read it and discuss it. Like, you know, fancy reading peoples.
Like fancy readiness reading peoples.
Right. And this week we are finishing up the Walking Dead retrospective. We originally had, I said volume 17 through 20. Eric had gotten a head start on me and basically read everything up to the present, which is up through issue 129. Yep. So I did the same thing. So we're all caught up.
Did I tell you that?
You did.
I mean, beforehand, like, and that's why you read all that stuff, or did you just keep reading?
No, I read it because you did. You told me on Wednesday, I think, and I said, okay, well, I might as well.
I don't remember telling you on Wednesday, but then again, I did have a lot of stuff going on Wednesday.
Yeah, but you told me, so I was like, I'll do the same thing so we can talk about the same things. You don't have no one, neither of us in the dark. But this is, I mean, for really, this is this whole, all this from, this is issues 97 through 129 mm-hmm. are almost all concerning Rick teaming up with multiple other communities to fight off the Saviors, as they are called, led by Negan or Negan. How do you think he's
I've
that
been saying
set?
Negan.
Negan, that's probably right.
It's a stupid name.
It is a really stupid name. I got tired of it very quickly, especially considering he's like, after Rick, the other main character of all these books.
He just won't go away.
He won't. And it's a good thing we read all of them, because All Out War Part 2 would be contained in the books we didn't read. So you kind of had to read them to get what happens.
It almost doesn't make sense to stop at that point.
No, it doesn't.
It also doesn't make sense to announce that you're reading a certain bit and then read off a bunch more after that. But
it's fine.
What the hell? Let's just talk about the. I don't know. I think it's fine.
I think it's fine too. You guys If you haven't read past whatever we said you're going to read, spoilers are bound. Okay, so pause the podcast. Go read the 9 issues that we didn't cover.
Yeah,
and then come back. I'm actually kind of excited to talk about this because I half really like it and half really don't like it.
I completely understand, and I'm at the point where I'm fairly frustrated with the story. While I was reading it, I sort of couldn't put it down. Like, I think the Walking Dead is no longer like literature. And it's like an addiction, you know, it's like fucking cigarettes, you know,
it
like
really
you're like,
is.
this shit's killing me, but let me
I
go
can't
smoke
stop.
Two of them. Exactly.
And it's just exhausting. I don't know if this stood out to you, Eric, but I really want to talk about one scene in particular.
Lay it on me.
It's one where Negan, God, that name's so terrible.
It doesn't matter how you pronounce it. It's the stupidest name.
When they first
They couldn't just name him George.
No, of course not. When they first encounter him face to face, and he has them all on the ground defenseless.
Yes.
It's like fucking Kirkman is in his body talking about who he's choosing to kill next. Yeah. I can't kill him because he's too popular. I can't kill the kid. I can't kill the girl. Like,
yeah. I never thought about it that way, but it's like Kirkman griping about the fans talking about it. You know?
Yeah.
I totally see that now that you say that.
Well, I didn't think about it at first. But I was actually listening to a comic book podcast, War Rocket Ajax Today, and they were actually discussing something totally unrelated, but they did mention, sparked like this whole thing in my head, where they're talking about how Warren Ellis he was talking about We Three, which we've read on read for the podcast. And he says,
that's right.
And he said, We Three is flawed at its core because it is so emotionally manipulative. That it is, the premise is based around, look, these are three cute animals, and now we're going to torture them. And It made me think of the tiger of Shiva or Shiva. I don't know how it's actually, I don't know how to pronounce it correctly.
I think depending, you it can actually way. Be pronounced either way. Just okay. depends on the region.
But we're into this arc. You're introduced to a character named Ezekiel, who is a king, quote unquote, of his kingdom, where everything is like arranged like it's medieval times. And he has a pet tiger. And immediately go, wow, that's badass. That's kind of cool. He has like a pet tiger that he actually was a former zookeeper and he raised it. And he actually, they give you motivation and why he cares so much about this tiger. And the fact that this tiger is so much more powerful than him, but the tiger still follows him along acting because the tiger thinks that he's more powerful. And it's really touching. I really like that. I make no mistake about it. I love cats. And that is not excluded to small cats. I love tigers too. When I was a kid, I was obsessed with tigers. And
you're so gay.
I know. But it was, and I was like, that's so cool. It's like, and he's trained in sword fighting to a certain degree. And he's a gentleman to Michonne. And like they have like this really neat relationship. But then the tiger gets killed by zombies defending Ezekiel. And I'm like, and that clicked to me. Like, this is, and like, wait a second. Kirkman and this Negan, stupid motherfucker is just like is like a bro personification of Robert Kirkman. Of him continually going, oh, I'm not going to, like, really, another thing that bothered me, who's it, Holly? That she goes over and he stops a guy from raping her, murders the dude in front of her. Like, what, the next issue? She's sent into to Rick's camp as a zombie because they killed her and turned her into a zombie.
Yep.
They want to push this guy. Oh, he has rules and he enforces them. But
it's not really followed up on.
No, it's not. It's just the stupidest. What do they want him to do next? So that's what they allow him to do. He'll wage biological warfare, but he's not cool with rape. It doesn't make any sense. There's no rhyme or reason. And they paint him, it's just because he's dumb. But they also want to make him, like, so super smart at the same time. Like, you can't have it both ways.
I think anyone that, like, he's basically already treating women as property because he's got, like, all these fucking concubines.
And yes, exactly.
Anyone that's like that is probably pretty cool with rape.
Mm-hmm. It's what he's been doing the entire time.
It's like I don't know, everything about him is this sort of adolescent boy fantasy.
It is. And then the fact that he has this baseball bat wrapped in barbed wire that he has a name for and that it talks to him, but they never like commit to that. Like if he was full, if like he treated the bat like it was an actual person all the time,
yeah.
I'd be totally cool with that. I could buy, like, a crazy person who, like, thinks that this weapon is alive and is talking to him. It works in this world. But he only does it half the time. Like, everything about him is, like, half-ass.
I was gonna say half-baked. There's a lot of half-baked, like, idea. Like, he could work, and it still was very compelling.
Yeah.
But there clearly was a whole lot of stuff that... A lot of guns that didn't fire, a lot of ideas that were shown to us that were never actualized. And I don't think they're necessarily being set up to be actualized in the next section.
Right.
It's just a lot of balls being dropped.
Right. And I think that's what's so frustrating about this. And I think we both said that you want to like really like it because there's so much good in it. He still writes like I talked about Ezekiel and his motivations around his tiger and all that. That was it's good. The like how these people feel and how they talk. Each character is unique in certain little ways and it makes them very interesting. Carl is so fascinating. He's really interesting. I'm really like he's the character I care more about anyone else. By end of issue 129.
I love how he's growing up to be moody emo kid.
Yeah, with the hair covering the MDI.
He grows his hair over his eye socket.
Yeah.
That's very artful. I do I genuinely, unapologetically love that.
Yeah, it's real. And he wants to, like, learn a trade. He wants to be a blacksmith. Like, I think that's really interesting that he doesn't want to be the fighter. Like, he wants to learn how to make things, which is what, like, I think the idea is. I mean, he's like, he's the first of this next generation who they have to build, not fight. I think that's a lovely way to show that. But it's mixed in with we end with All Out War parts 1 and 2, and Rick decides not to kill Negan or whatever. He decides to imprison him. And I think that's...
We'll just call him George.
George. And I'm okay with that decision.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's interesting that he's still around and that the way that he's going to be punished is by being kept alive. And it is a civilized response. And I think it shows what Rick is trying to do with these people. And I loved getting to 127, 128. And all it is them, like, introducing new people, building this new society. It's like them farming and they're managing things like that. I thought it's really refreshing because you just got finished reading 20 issues of nothing but fighting and people, like, cursing at each other and mutilating each other.
I was excited about it because I felt like it was going to be a shift to new main characters.
Yeah.
And Rick is going to become more of a background character, but it certainly feels like by the end of that,
yeah,
it's not, and it's going to shift back to being the Rick show.
Yeah.
Which I'm tired of.
Yeah. And just another more, these seeds of they invite, and now they're twisting around the fact that, you know, Rick and his gang used to be the people they brought into a community and they didn't trust anyone. Now they bring in these new people and now they don't trust anything and they're going to try and seeds, you know, sow seeds of discourse and all that. Discord, not discourse.
Whatever. Whatever kind of seeds you got.
Seeds of talking.
Yeah.
I'm just tired. Like, I don't need to see more of that. Let's fuck up this situation again and let's see. What can we just see how they function as a, like, can we, maybe that, why can't that be where this comic goes, where they just try and rebuild as a society and make it more, less about killing zombies and more about functioning as people and not having to worry about murderers all the time? Why is it?
I'm starting to wonder, you know, can he keep that course? I mean, any way it goes, like, when is it just going to start? When are people just sort of going to start jumping off? At what point is it going to be obvious that, you know, half-formed ideas and just, cause it seems like it's so driven by the fan base.
Yeah.
I mean, if it becomes a story about, and I agree with you that it feels like that's what is going to be the interesting part of the story.
Right.
What's not going to be done to death. It's going to be about the human element, about the challenges of rebuilding the society. But, I mean, really when it's down to it, it is a zombie story. It's going to have almost no zombies in it. It's going to just, I mean, who's going to want to read it at that point? No new readers are going to come in. It's going to be a slowly dying off of the old readers until shit falls apart again. I mean, do we really need a damn zombie story to go on for 10 years?
I know, and that's, I think, the next thing I was going to say is that this, we have to read issue 129. I guess there's nothing wrong with, as long as there's demand for this comic to keep, I mean, I don't, that's the way capitalism works and supply and demand, and that, I mean, I'm glad that there's successful comic books out there. I mean, this is a big crossover thing that, I mean, gets a lot of people into comics because they watch the TV show and then they want to read the comic. There's a reason all those Walking Dead trades are always bestsellers every single month. And that's all fine and good, but I'm not going to keep reading this. There's no reason to, with the fact that, you know, I was really interested after I read 127, 128, And then it just creeps right back into that we can't trust people thing. And I think that's all this comic has been. I guess they just want, they might as well just keep doing it because it keeps selling. I'm not interested in that. And it's unfortunate because this is what Kirkman is mostly known for. This, and I mean, Invincible to a somewhat lesser extent. And this is, he does it so well, the character stuff in it is so good sometimes. But it's just mired in who's going to die next. And I don't need to read a book where everyone is just killed and killed and killed and killed. Like, we compare this in Game of Thrones a lot because they do the same thing where they're not precious necessarily with any of their characters. I mean, the fact is that this has kind of gone away from that.
Yeah.
That there's like 20 guys that we all know who they are. We know their faces. We know what they are. We know Andrew. We know Rick. We know Carl. We know Michonne. We know Rosita. We know Eugene. We know Jesus, for God's sake.
Yep.
We know all these people. We know their names. We know all about them. And, you know, we lost one really big, Abraham, I guess. Abraham and Glenn and Abraham, we lost at the beginning of this arc, but they were replaced immediately by three or four new people with names that we know. And that I don't care. Like, it doesn't make any sense to, why are we, what is this? It's just another cycle of, what is he going to have another reaping where half of them die and we get new ones? I'm just tired of it.
The thing, and we've even done this before, that I would no longer compare it to Game of Thrones.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it is basically lost in comic book form. We've said this.
Yes.
But there's the similarities are, they're all there. They treat the characters the same way in that it eventually became a core group of characters. People died around them.
Right.
The fans really drove the way the story went. I mean, there were characters in Lost that were written in and then written out two episodes later because the fans are like, I don't like these people. And it feels a lot of the same thing here. And it also feels like it's about twice as long as it needs to be.
Yeah. I mean, the same thing. I was listening to that podcast today, and they were talking about Preacher. They were talking about Transmetropolitan. Two great series.
Yes.
Both of which half as long as this and tell a clear and concise story.
Yeah.
And this seems like, I'm fairly certain Garth Ennis could have written Preacher forever.
Yes. No, he clearly could have.
Yeah. And
like it's rife with, I mean, you could tell Jesse Custer stories for the rest of your life.
But he didn't. He ended it. There was an ending. And that's another thing why Game of Thrones, as much as I'm tired of waiting for George R. R. Martin to just finish these books, he has an ending in mind. He knows where it's going to a certain extent. He may flesh them out as he goes, add another couple thousand words a piece, but more than a couple thousand. But I know he has an ending in mind, and I know that he wants to get there. Kirkman said, I know where it's going to end, but I can, he said this on the Nerdist. He said, I can, you know, float around forever if I have to. And that when it ends, I'll read the ending because that's all I care about at this point.
Yeah. I'm not interested in reading someone's gravy train.
Right. And it's a shame because it's like it's very compelling. Like it makes you want to keep reading it, but ultimately it's kind of empty because there's no end in sight. It's just forever of this. And I'm not interested in that.
Yeah. The longer it goes on, the thinner it's stretched.
Yeah. What is it? An ethical war is one that has an end. A planned end. And I say the same about comic books.
So you're saying that this is an unethical comic book?
Little.
Okay. Show enough.
But I would be remiss of saying that I think the art in this it's getting better. I think it's still Adler is doing great work.
I know. I just want to high five the guy. Like just every time he's getting very good. I enjoy the hell out of this of his work.
Yeah, it's at multiple like every. I think we've said this every time, like he's getting better and better, but he is like it's getting the characters look more well defined. The action is like clearer, storytelling still super strong. Like the layouts can be simple, but really dynamic at the same time. Sometimes it's really wonderful. And I wish the storytelling could keep up with that, but I think you talked about this last week, is that it's like,
oh yeah,
inverse proportions, like the artist keeps mm-hmm. getting better and the writer just keeps getting kind of repetitive.
I forget what that plot is called,
right?
We'll need to get some sort of math wizard to tell us, but you know, one is going down, one is going up, and they cross in the middle. Adler's getting better and Kirkman is sort of tanking it.
Resting on his laurels.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really troubling because there's a lot of good stuff in it. It's just frustrating to read.
Yes.
Yeah. Anything else you want to touch on, Eric? Anything else you want to discuss in particular?
Not really. Glenn's nasty head.
My God. That is just... That scene is the thing that has turned me against this book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can we talk about that?
No, I mean, that's just an extension of him deciding who to kill. And then he brutally murders Glenn, who's a completely, like Rick points out further later down the road, that Glenn is an almost innocent character. He wanted to escape all this. Oh, he has a kid on the way now. And then, he's the one that randomly gets picked to get murdered. Brutally. Right? Beaten to death with a baseball bat wrapped in barbed wire, shown explicitly. And it's just, like, such a blatant exploitation. It's like exploitation of our the more emotional manipulation. And all storytelling is, at its core, emotional manipulation. But it's so transparent wherein the character goes, oh, I can't kill you. I can't kill you. I can't kill any of you. Let me just
The transparency is really the thing. And that's what always bothered me about Lost. And that's what I see in this. You know, to where we even talked about it. The reversals.
Right.
You know, like, let's kill Rick.
Yeah.
Ta-da! What do you mean, kill Rick? I like Rick.
And that's we finished at the end of issue 129. Oh, these new people have met George, and
this name's George now.
And he tells them, "These people are monsters. How can I be in prison? Like, why would they imprison me? I'm a good person." And
I was jaywalking.
No one on fucking Earth, especially in a fucking undead apocalypse, their first inclination when they get to a peaceful community where everything is nice, everyone is super nice to each other, they get fed, they get taken care of, the first thing new is break in, find the one prisoner, there's one of them that's a lifer, and then go trust him completely. And even if it doesn't end up like that, where it's a complete fake out and they end up going, oh, this guy's full of shit, then why the fuck did you end issue 129 on that cliffhanger? Because you want people to buy fucking 130, and it's so transparent at this point, it's so annoying. Transparency.
You want to talk about Forever Evil now? That was a pretty good rant.
Good. I like it. It's been sitting inside me all day. I've been thinking about it. I'm like, oh.
Oh, it's beautiful.
It's really unfortunate that I think The Walking Dead, if it had ended after 75 issues. If it had been constructed to end then, been amazing. But instead, it's just keep going, and I don't see it ending. And that's not it's turning into, like, I think most people read indie comic books is because they have an ending. Like, they know that this book isn't going to go on forever. It's going to have a concrete ending. It's going to have a beginning, middle, end. It's kind in some sort of way. And I mean, a lot of, we mentioned Preacher, I mentioned Transmetropolitan, Sandman is another one, where certainly they will stumble, there'll be ups and downs of quality, but at least they know they end in a certain way, they tell their story, and then they're done. In The Walking Dead, it's issue 129, it's turning into Spider-Man or X-Men, and I don't read The Walking Dead for that. I don't, and if you're gonna be that, at least be open about it. Like, turn it into a different book. Like, turn it into, like, this civilization rebuilding story where it's not focused on violence and the only threat are, like, an occasional zombie or an ethical dilemma that makes you actually think. Not, like, that's what I like so much about them not killing George.
George.
Yeah, George. It's just, it's just going to keep resorting back to that same old tropes. And it's not.
Well, do you think that switching up the teams would be an important part of that kind of Walking Dead? Do you feel like that's what's stagnating it? Or do you think it's just specifically, I mean, are you talking about switching up characters, switching up writers, artists?
No, Kirkman's a great writer when he doesn't, there's so much good stuff in this. He writes the dialogue so well.
Yeah. I mean, he's very good. Yeah, I mean, he is. It's popular for a reason. It is. It's not because he's shitty.
No, and and Adler is certainly doing, he's the best work he's done. It just keeps getting better.
And that's what I'm saying. I'm not saying this is a criticism of them.
No.
But do you think that it's just a matter of passing the torch? Because this is what, I mean, even someone like Claremont didn't do X-Men. He's not still doing X-Men.
No.
Lots of people have worked on X-Men.
Lots of people. I don't necessarily think they should. I would think just, it's called The Walking Dead. It's outlived that title. Yeah. I think that's what it, I mean, I think that
it's really just impossible to do a zombie story
that's this
for
long.
10 years.
Exactly.
It's ludicrous. Do you think that had they compressed this and made instead of George, it had been the governor, and they had done this arc with the governor, they had compressed it to that?
If there is an ending, like, have you played Red Dead Redemption?
Yes. Never finished it.
Rockstar. Okay.
Yeah. It's basically GTA with horses.
Right. But you haven't got to the ending?
No, never finished
it. Do you care if I spoil it?
Whatever.
Okay. The ending of that game is the guy you play as, what's his name? Mars something? I forget his name. Bothered me, can't remember it, but
isn't like John Marshall or something?
Yeah,
I don't remember.
It's something like that, but he's this reformed criminal.
I want to say Marston,
but that just makes me think of that kid, the guy who played Lex Luthor, I think, on Smallville.
So his name is Lex Luthor.
The character's name in that video game is Lex Luthor. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the game, basically, you've been wrangled around by these government agents, made you do dirty shit for them because they blackmailed you, extorted you because you have this past. And they end up pinning all this shit on you and having basically a massive crew hunt you down and kill you after you've settled peacefully into this farm life. And that's mostly how the story ends, is you get killed. Then there's nothing you can do to stop it. You can take out of some of them on the way, but you cannot not die. The game is constructed so that you end up getting killed.
Hmm.
And then, and like GTA, it still remains an open world game because it's a flash forward to your son, who now lives the exact same life as you did, as an outlaw. As this guy lives on the fringes doing shady things to stay alive. And a lot of the story is about you trying to give your son and your wife a different life. And the government ends up killing you and basically propagating this. And it's a kind of a criticism on modern, crime and, punishment and all that stuff and justice. But I think that if they had wanted to, kill Rick, and then we flash forward to Carl surviving in some way in the future, like a jump forward, like 10 years or something, I think that would, if they did that, a flash forward 10 years and a new, either have Carl as the main character or have a new person end up encountering Carl along the way and then they team up or something along those lines. If you're going to stay centered on Rick, don't give us the same thing about this. We build up a city and then it gets blown up by stupid fucks.
Yeah. I mean, you can only fool me so many times.
Exactly.
Before I'm saying shame on me.
Right.
Or maybe shame on you. Maybe that's really what this feels like. Shame on you, Robert Kirkman.
Yeah. I mean,
shame on you.
Yeah. I'm sure this will continue being successful. I'm going to wait for the end, whenever that is. I'll read it then.
Never.
Yeah, I'll...
Never!
It'll end eventually. Everything does. We learned that in New Avengers. Everything dies.
Yes, and sometimes it's very badly drawn.
Sometimes it is badly drawn. Okay. Well, that ends our Walking Dead retrospective, I guess. Anything? I think we touched on everything.
Yeah, it goes out with a... Not with a bang, but with a whimper.
Or a ranting.
A forever evil style shouting match.
Shouting, yeah. So, folks, we are going to take a U-turn, 180, away from grim, dark horror of The Walking Dead. And we're going to read Seconds by Brian Lee O'Malley, just recently released, I believe, last month. So... Yeah, read along with us.
Or else.
I think we make that threat every week.
Mm-hmm. Well, I do.
Eric does. I don't do it.
I'm
the good cop. Eric's bad cop.
Yep. You're the mustache. I'm the muscle.
I can live with that.
I have a mustache too.
That's true. I didn't want to poke holes in your theory, so I just let it go.
Well, it doesn't matter. You have to divide labor somehow.
I mean, it's more efficient.
Yeah.
We're
I don't want to mustache in on your territory.
With that, I think that'll bring this episode to a close.
Are you sure I can keep going?
You probably could. We have to end. We can't be the Walking Dead Eric. We have to end sometime.
You're right.
We are the Handsome Boys Comics Hour. You can find us at handsomeboyscomicshour.com. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/handsomeboyscomicshour. You can find us on Twitter at HBCR. You can email us, handsomeboyscomics@gmail.com. Please, if you like us, like what you hear, go to iTunes, leave us a good review, subscribe to us. They really help us get featured more on iTunes, helps us get more listeners. If you do nothing else, please do that. Really appreciate it. You can find me on Twitter at MixmasterCereal, MixmasterCereal. Eric, where can they find you online?
You can see my portfolio by going to freewillunlimited.com. You can see most of the things I get up to online by going to ericzgoodnight.com. And you can tweet at me. My Twitter handle is Mr. Bad Example, spelled MR Bad Example.
With that, folks, we'll bring this one to a close. Have a good one.
Rock and roll.